We're talking about toxins in clothing here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So there are chemicals that make our clothes wrinkle-free, flame-resistant, waterproof, stain-resistant, mildew-resistant, and the list goes on and on. Recall last year, Delta employees sued Lands' End, alleging their uniforms made employees sick. This and another suit are making their way through federal court. Have you brought clothing from fast fashion retailers in the investigation, like Shein or AliExpress? Are you worried about chemicals in your clothes? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. Miriam Diamond is a professor in the Department of Earth Sciences at the University of Toronto, where her lab focuses on understanding chemical contaminants. Miriam, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. So this phrase that will come up sometimes in our conversation is fast fashion. Give us some explanation, if you will, what fast fashion is, how we spot it.
I'm absolutely amazed at what fast fashion is. I should tell your listeners that I'm an older person, so I grew up with not a whole lot of clothes. You know, you got clothes maybe once or twice a year, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, three times a year was good. So typically the fashion cycle had about two releases of clothing a year. And now it's up to an astonishing number of different fashion items. For example, so we're now into up to, 52 micro-seasons. Micro-seasons, not even a season of fashion, but a micro-season. Distributors such as H&M, Zara, Boohoo have rolled out fashion lines with these very short times. They have up to 36,000 products available at any one time. And that means they're overproducing by about 40%. Shein has brought this to next level. So whereas Zara launches about 10,000 new products a year, Shein releases 6,000 so-called fresh stock units a day. 6,000 a day. Now that could include old designs with new colors. But to consider the speed of production, the overproduction, if you're having 52 micro seasons of fashion, that implies that we're wearing the clothes for a very limited time. It implies a lot of turnover, a lot of raw materials going into those clothes, and a lot of waste.
You led an investigation testing dozens of items from three of these fast fashion retailers, some names you've mentioned there, and found elevated chemical levels. What did you find?
Yes, I would like to start by saying that our study was commissioned by the Canadian Broadcast Corporation, or the CBC. Mm-hmm. They thought of the idea and pursued it. My lab has been working with textiles for many years. That's why they came to us. Well, so they did all the purchasing. They purchased, you know, from, as you said, AliExpress and Shein and other fast fashion distribution houses. All the items were purchased through the internet. There were no bricks and mortar stores involved. Mm-hmm. I was really quite astonished to find particularly high levels of lead in, for example, a kid's fake leather trench coat. We found over 1,700 parts per million of lead. Now, the Canadian limit for lead in children's products is 90 parts per million. So this is over 20 times higher than the Canadian limit.
Wow.
There was also a red purse. It contained 500 parts per million lead, as well as some cadmium and arsenic.
So again, other heavy metals, yeah.
Yes, exceeded the health guidelines for children's products.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Miriam Diamond, who's a professor and researcher at the University of Toronto. Her research focuses on developing strategies to reduce chemical contaminants in the environment. We're looking at toxic material in clothing, in fabric, how it gets there. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Miriam, why would these chemicals be in these items in the first place?
Great question. I don't know. I have some suspicions for the lead. Lead can be used in dyes. It's a cheap way to dye clothing, presumably. So that's what I suspect, and particularly for some of these, the leather and the pleather, the fake leather items. The phthalates that we measured in both kids and adult clothing can be used as an adhesive for appliques.
Mm-hmm.
Can be used as a plasticizer. You know how you have some T-shirts and other items have an applique on it, and it's very flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I suspect that that's where the phthalates are used in order to confer that flexibility. The other metals are presumably also used as dyes, maybe but because these are not actual leather items, I suspect they're used as dyes. We found PFAS, which stands for poly and perfluoroalkyl substances.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long word, so we use the short form PFAS. It's also known as the forever chemical.
The forever chemicals, yes. Yeah.
We found those, and I should mention that was done in the lab of Marta Venier at Indiana University. She found two items had high levels of PFAS. They were also in some kids' items. It was in a rain jacket. So
mm-hmm.
PFAS is used to repel rain so that the item doesn't get wet. And probably your listeners would be familiar with Gore-Tex,
for example.
Gore-Tex is a type of PFAS.
Mm. Yeah, you know, PFAS being a group of more than 9,000 human-made chemicals, I think the EPA says it's 9,252 at this point, and they represent this really growing, increasingly diverse category of chemicals. Why should we be very concerned about PFAS in particular? We've been talking a lot about PFAS in Wisconsin just for some information here, because they're finding a lot in the water we drink.
That is really problematic, because once it's in the water, it is super hard to get out of the water. So there's a lot of concern about the number of Americans, the number of people worldwide who are being exposed to PFAS through drinking water, through food, and here we're finding out through clothing. The concern with PFAS is that they are the forever chemicals. It takes them so long, if ever, to break down. And that's because just the chemistry of it, these are incredibly strong, lifelong, more than lifelong chemicals, so they don't break down in the environment. Different types of PFAS, and you mentioned how many different types of PFAS, but we only know the toxicity of a really small fraction of the total PFAS that are being used. So far, what's been found is that some of the PFAS can affect fat metabolism, and that's of concern, because it can alter your sensitivity to insulin, the way you metabolize fat. It could be an obesogen that could cause you to gain weight, even though you're doing your best not to. So that's one set of health risks. There are also some PFAS that interfere with your immune function. And that's really serious, particularly right now during the pandemic. Some research has shown that people with higher levels of some types of PFAS have immune dysfunction. Vaccinations, for example, are less efficacious or don't work as well to protect people because the immune system doesn't respond in as robust a way. There is a small study that has shown a relationship between a particular type of PFAS and the incidence of COVID. Now, I should mention it's a small study,
mm-hmm.
and it's a particular type of PFAS, but we don't want to be doing these experiments in real time. PFAS has been associated with other adverse effects, including type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure during pregnancy, and reduced fertility.
Let's pause there with University of Toronto environmental chemist Miriam Diamond is with us sharing her research on toxic metals, on chemicals, on PFAS in clothing. Do you wash your new clothes before you wear an item? What do you think that does? Have you ever had a skin breakout, a reaction due to a piece of clothing you wore? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Miriam Diamond here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about toxic chemicals and treating clothing here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Fast fashion is inexpensive clothing. They're produced rapidly by mass market retailers in order to pump out the latest trends at a low price point. Researchers have found that this clothing often contains toxic fabric dyes and other ingredients that contaminate water, contaminate the environment. What toxic chemicals are you most concerned about in clothing? Do you read your labels or learn about the manufacturing before you buy an item? Do you shop at thrift stores or try to avoid some of the more recent chemical processes in clothing? Join in 800-642-1234. We have University of Toronto professor Miriam Diamond, who is with us for the hour. Miriam, can you explain how the methods that you use to investigate these pieces of clothing, like the instruments you used in the lab, how you dissected, so to speak, these items?
Yes, I can explain that. Well, first, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, the study was commissioned by our Canadian Broadcast Corporation, who are looking into really how consumers are... the deception of consumers in terms of what you buy. And, you know, you mentioned, do you look at the label? And I just wanted to say, the label won't disclose these chemicals. Right. So what we did is the Canadian Broadcast Corporation, or CBC, purchased these items online. They were both kids and adult fast fashion. It was all women's fast fashion, girls and women. We analyzed the clothing in our lab for a series of phthalates. Phthalates are plasticizers. They're known endocrine disruptors. That's why we're concerned with them. My colleague at the Université de Montréal, or the University of Montreal, Kevin Wilkinson, analyzed the samples for metals. And my colleague, Professor Marta Vanier at Indiana University, analyzed the samples for PFAS, the forever chemicals.
And when you analyzed these items, how did you, like, you know, do you have to put them in a washing machine, like under a microscope? What instruments did you use?
I had this amazing undergraduate student, Anna Shalin, who sampled all the clothing. She cut the clothing into little pieces.
Mm-hmm.
We extracted the bits of clothing that we received in all our labs. We extracted them, purified those extracts, and then for Marta and myself, we used mass spectrometry. Marta used liquid chromatographic mass spectrometry. We used gas chromatographic. You see, I can't even say it. Mass spectrometry. And in Kevin Wilkinson's lab, it was inductively coupled plasma mass spectrometry. I hope that's enough detail on that one.
Well, something that quite gets into the chemistry. You know, something that I didn't think about, Miriam, in my cotton clothes, for instance, is that conventional cotton is grown with perhaps genetically modified seeds, and you've got the herbicides on the crop and the pesticides for pest control. Do these toxins, even at the growth level of these crops, do they persist in the fabric even after manufacturing?
And the answer is, I think so. We haven't tested the fabrics for pesticides.
Okay.
But I'm glad, Kate, that you mentioned that, because when we think of fast fashion, we shouldn't just be thinking about the immediacy of the fashion, you know, the fact that we're wearing it and we can be exposed. I mean, I am concerned. I certainly wouldn't want that little red purse with high levels of lead, or that kid's jacket with super high levels of lead. I wouldn't want that in my house. But we need to think really broadly about the impact of fashion, because, like, we're sharing the planet. Cotton, for example, takes a lot of water and pesticides to grow. There's a very high environmental burden associated with growing cotton. Cotton is probably the most popular textile that's used in fashion.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the synthetics that are used from oil. Well, there's an environmental burden, as you know, from oil extraction. The environmental burden is associated with just extracting from it, exploring for oil, extracting it, purifying it in refineries, transporting it where you do get oil spills. Oil spills are inevitable.
Mm.
All the way to the purification and the production of polyester and other synthetics. So there's a lot that goes into going from the raw material to the actual fiber, to the article of clothing, and then to end of life.
We're talking with Miriam Diamond, professor at the University of Toronto, oversees lab testing and has done testing on clothing samples and accessories as part of a CBC investigation. You can join in with your questions about fabrics, textiles, what's in them, 800-642-1234. Ilsa is joining us from Franklin. Hi, Ilsa. Go ahead. What is your question?
My question is why do they put in the clothing cotton, or any kind of a clothing, how you buy spandex in there? Because every time I wash my T-shirt a few times, and it seems those fibers, the spandex fibers, seem to break down, and the skin starts to itch.
And Ilsa, I want to just pause there because I think we can hear some of the radio in the background. But Ilsa, wondering about spandex, why it breaks down and causes itches and breakouts.
So much of the clothing is not made to be durable. So what that actually means, and fast fashion, which is so cheap, is the extreme example. The fibers are not spun to be durable. What that actually means is that the fibers break, come off. The evidence of that in everyday clothing is that your garment may start to pill. You know how you get those little bumbles?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it can actually happen within hours. What that means actually is that the fibers are breaking off from those long fibers woven into the textile. They're breaking off, and they're accumulating in these little pills that come off. That will come off on your skin. Those fiber bundles are not just sort of the polyester or the cotton itself, but also the additives. For example, one of my colleagues at University of Albany has found that about one-third of pure cotton, it's marketed as pure cotton, contains other chemicals that are added to give different types of functionality. And those other chemicals include, for example, bisphenol A, antioxidants that are added to provide greater to protect against the effects of UV light from the sun. So these chemicals are added to provide function. But the problem is that the industry is not making sufficiently durable and sustainable textiles, fabrics, and clothing.
Miriam Diamond with us, professor in the Department of Earth Sciences at University of Toronto. She's telling us about pollutants in our clothes. Do you wonder if your favorite fabric is more or less problematic? What do you want to know about how these chemicals are regulated in fabric dyes and washes? Have you tried to avoid supporting companies that use toxic chemicals? What have you encountered? Can you even find out what these chemicals are? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Miriam Diamond after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're learning about the toxic chemicals that are in the fashion industry on The Morning Show. I'm Kay Darcher-Kent. Fast fashion is the term used for low-cost, trendy clothing, and that has come with a price to the environment. The short life cycle of these garments means less consideration for waste. According to the EPA, the generation of textiles in 2018 was 17 million tons. Are you concerned about chemical processes that go into making your clothing? We have University of Toronto Professor Miriam Diamond, whose lab focuses on reducing chemicals in the environment. She's with us for the hour. Let's go to Linda now in Pewaukee. Linda, hi. What can you share?
Well, hi. This is feeling kind of validating for me because I have had experiences with clothing and leather goods and electronics where the smell was so bad, I actually returned some of the items because I couldn't wear them. And
what kind of smell? What kind of smell did you experience?
It's hard to explain. Mm-hmm. It was just like a strong chemical smell.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
The purse actually smelled like fertilizer.
Mm.
I sort of felt like an outlier, like, well, am I the only one that is, can smell this stuff? And so it's kind of good, to hear that it's a thing. And the items that I purchased, they were not fast fashion items. They were quite utilitarian, and they were name brand items. So,
Miriam, any insights there on the off-gassing of these items, or Linda saying, a chemical smell, maybe fertilizer smell?
Well, I'm not sure about the chemicals that you're smelling, Linda, but I do sympathize with you. The clothing is, there's just so many chemicals that go into clothing to make sure they're sized properly, to be wrinkle-free, to be stain resistant. There's so many of these different types of functionalities. It could also be that they are treated so that they're not subject to mildew. The problem is that the textile and clothing industry is really very secretive. So we don't know what's going on. We don't actually know what the chemicals are. And that's why we did this study to do the testing.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. How are these chemicals regulated, and does regulation differ for certain chemicals or classes of chemicals?
I'm not an expert on chemical regulation. Especially
okay.
in the U.S.
Mm-hmm,
I
mm-hmm.
do know that in Canada we have regulations for lead in kids' clothing,
mm-hmm.
not for our adult clothing, as far as I can see.
Mm-hmm.
There is the Consumer Product Safety Commission in the
mm-hmm.
U.S. that
mm-hmm.
does look after items of clothing, but as far as I can see, that's mostly related to flammability, not to, say, toxic chemicals that can be added to which you're exposed.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole area of regulatory oversight is important. I don't think there's been much done on it.
Let's go to Anne now in Appleton. Anne, hi. What would you like to share?
For 6 years I've had a rash on my back, and I've shown the dermatologist, and it's from stretchy, I don't want to say, it was stretchy undergarment fabric. And I'm not sure what the chemical is that would be in there. And I was wondering if your guest knew what chemical that was that would cause a rash. And you need to wear something like cotton underneath that layer to protect your skin. And this is ridiculous with the fabric industry.
Yeah, Anne experiencing that breakout on her back. And Miriam, any insights there on that reaction?
Well, I think there could be two things. It could be a chemical reaction, but it could also be just the physical irritation of your skin. But I'm not a dermatologist, so I'm going to be very careful with what I say, but I really sympathize with you, Anne. And again, it goes to my previous point that there's so little oversight into the chemicals that are used and the implications of the chemicals. It calls for greater consumer advocacy. And I have to say, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm getting kind of tired about being a consumer advocate for so many things. But it really requires the clothing industry to be much more accountable for what they do.
If you wash before wear, Miriam, wash that item before you wear it, does that have an impact?
Washing will release some of the chemicals, but the chemicals that were used or that were the garment was treated with, for example, for transport. But the chemicals that we tested for are added specifically because they provide a function.
Hmm.
So the lead, probably for the color, the phthalates, for giving the flexibility, PFAS for the water repellency. Washing your garments will release a little bit of those chemicals, but if you release the chemicals, then you're not going to get the functionality. For example, you know how you might have an old T-shirt with an with some sort of picture on it, you know, applique,
mm-hmm.
and it cracks over time?
Yes.
Well, the cracking indicates that the plasticizer has migrated out of that T-shirt, let's say. It's gone into the wash water. It's gone into your bedroom air. It's gone into your bedroom dust. It's gone onto your clothing. And that's why it's cracked, because the plastic itself for the applique is probably not flexible. They added the plasticizer to give it the flexibility,
mm-hmm.
and that plasticizer is come off over time. So the chemicals we're talking about are intentionally added to give function.
I want to pause here on wrinkle-free clothing, because sometimes you see a tag that boasts this item is wrinkle-free. We haven't talked, I guess, about formaldehyde. Is that something, how is a product made to be wrinkle-free?
Well, again, I'm not a textile scientist.
Mm-hmm,
So I know that formaldehyde is used to make a garment wrinkle-free, and I do know that formaldehyde has toxicity. So we should not be exposed to higher levels of formaldehyde. And I don't know the I'm not sure who does, because I've not seen this being discussed in the literature, if there is oversight on levels of formaldehyde that are used to confer that wrinkle-free attribute versus what you're exposed to.
We're talking with Miriam Diamond, who's a professor and researcher in the Department of Earth Sciences at the University of Toronto, talking about the toxins in clothing with your experiences and questions. 800-642-1234. Matt is joining us from Viroqua. Hi, Matt. What would you like to ask?
Well, I'm up in the Driftless area, and there's a lot of young entrepreneurial farmers who are growing hemp up here. And wondering if hemp as a fiber requires less inputs when it's being grown. I don't really know the answer to that, but I guess listening to what your guest is saying, that it's really all about the additives post production. That, I mean, I guess you could have a hemp shirt that would have all of the water repellent stuff added to it, and it would be just as bad as a cotton shirt that has the water repellency added. But I guess I was just curious if there's anything about hemp that would make it advantageous, or if it's just going to It's yeah. just another fiber.
Matt, thank you on that fiber. Miriam, go ahead.
Yes, Matt, that's a great question. I'm so glad you asked that question because hemp is a better crop to grow for textiles. Like it is. It uses less water than cotton, a lot less water. It's a much more sustainable source of textiles than cotton. So I'm all in favor of hemp. How the hemp is treated after it's harvested and the production between, you know, getting the plant off the field and that hemp garment showing up on the rack, that's a good question. It could be that the hemp is also treated with additional chemicals. It could be. But we don't know that because we don't have full disclosure. But yes, I do think hemp is a much better alternative than cotton.
How can we avoid purchasing or supporting companies that use toxic chemicals to treat their clothing when the labels aren't transparent, when the manufacturing processes aren't transparent?
That's very difficult. The first thing I would recommend is not purchasing fast fashion. Fast fashion has it's so unsustainable. It's just astonishing. You mentioned the amount of waste produced every year from fast fashion. So fast fashion is not made to last, but we know that if you wore your clothes even 9 months longer, it would reduce environmental impacts by 20 to 30%. So fast fashion is just like all around bad, bad news everywhere from the impacts from production to the incredible amount of waste that's produced. I go for durable items, items as durable as possible. But it's really a problem because the chemical additives aren't on the label. It's very surprising what we find when we do the chemical testing.
Let's go to Sue now in Appleton. Sue, go ahead. Hi, Sue. Can you hear us? I think we're having some difficulty hearing Sue, but Sue has said, you know, I've purchased clothing with odors so bad I couldn't wear them. And is there anything more that can be done when you do smell these odors in clothing and you think it's due to the chemical processes?
Well, I would recommend putting them outside. So washing alone won't necessarily remove all these chemicals. It will remove some. But I just want to point out that when I say remove, what it means is it's going from that garment into your laundry water, into the wastewater treatment plant that may or may not be able to remove the chemicals before it's discharged into the water that comes back as drinking water.
Mm.
So we've got to be addressing this at the get-go of trying to avoid purchasing these items. Now, I want to say I'm very sympathetic because how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
How do you know if the garment actually, you know, smells really awful? And part of that would be purchasing in a bricks and mortar store where you can actually go in and see the garment as opposed to ordering online where you just have no idea what you're getting.
We have University of Toronto environmental chemist Miriam Diamond stays with us on the implications of fast fashion and understanding the impact of chemical processes in clothing manufacturing. Is there a label you want to give a shout out to due to their ethical and environmentally sustainable approach to manufacturing? Are you aware of how you get rid of clothes in your closet and where your discarded items go to? Have you ever had a health reaction after wearing a piece of clothing? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're learning about toxic materials used in the manufacturing of our clothes, what to do about it. The main source of textiles in municipal solid waste is discarded clothing. And the EPA measures and tracks this waste. Landfills received more than 11 million tons of textile waste in 2018. That's the latest published data from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Still time to talk about this with Miriam Diamond, who studies contaminants at the University of Toronto, with us for about 9 more minutes. Dave is joining us from Delavan. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Thank you for having this show. Thank you for taking my call. I'm afraid I tuned in rather late. I miss a great deal of it, but this is a very important topic to me. I've got some extreme chemical sensitivities, and my wife does a tremendous amount of sewing. She's always done alterations for friends, and she makes clothing. And in recent years, it's just gotten harder and harder. You bring home cloth from the fabric store, and as soon as she starts to iron it or do anything like that, I get sick. I'm wondering if there are any better sources for fabric where you can avoid some of this. And you mentioned something about putting clothing outside. Does that actually remove the toxins or render them inert or what?
Yeah, what does that do, Miriam?
Launder the fabric, for example, before she, and I bet she already does this, before sewing, I bet she puts the fabric into the washing machine with some detergent, which will take some of the chemicals out. Putting the fabric into the sunlight will help break down some other chemicals. For example, I don't know if you've used mothballs. Well, I bet you don't, for sure. But other listeners may use mothballs to ward off moths on, mm-hmm. for example, woolens. Well, the naphthalene and the chemicals that are used in mothballs doesn't just come off in the wash. But if you do put it in the sunlight, the UV radiation will help break down some of those chemicals. And some of the chemicals will just go into the air because there's more dilution outside. It's not a cure. I mean, it's not a 100% cure. And it's very, very hard to know, as I've mentioned, what chemicals go into the textiles, what goes into clothing. We don't have labeling. Mm. But it's not just a matter of labeling. It's a matter of holding the industry accountable for their practices.
Mary,
because not everybody can read the label, and labels come off.
You mentioned UV, and Mary from Junction, a city called, couldn't stay with us and wants to know if the lab has tested UV protective clothing and whether that clothing is safe. What have you found there?
We have not tested okay. UV protective clothing, which would contain UV blockers.
Mm-hmm.
We know that some of the UV blockers have some toxicity. I don't know if the UV blockers will come off sufficient. They do come off the garment over time. Whether that causes toxicity, don't know.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Tim now in the Chicago area. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes. Mm-hmm.
Great. I was wondering if you are aware of any companies that don't use these kinds of chemicals, and if it's possible in doing any kind of research to determine if the fabric you're buying or the clothing you're buying don't use these kinds of chemicals.
Tim, thank you. Miriam, go ahead.
Tim, I'm not aware. We didn't do an extensive market basket test of all clothing. We looked at particularly at fast fashion and found, you know, we found quite a number of items with higher levels of chemicals that we were concerned about. Not all, but, you know, quite a number. It's really hard to know. So I would look for labels that pride themselves with producing sustainable clothing. And I would ask them. I would go to the labels and ask them, you know, tell me about the chemicals that you use in your products.
What about organic textiles? Would organic textiles be part of a solution?
Well, not really, because organic cotton means that it's grown with minimal pesticides. The organic cotton still uses an awful lot of water and uses an awful lot of land that could have gone for other uses. So organic cotton is not necessarily, maybe I'll say that organic cotton is protecting the farmers,
mm-hmm.
and the people who harvest the cotton bolls, so they're not being exposed to the pesticides. That's good. not necessarily good for the region because of water use. And it still does not consider all the dyes and all the other chemicals that go into making that garment. Maybe the organic cotton garments are have fewer additives. I don't know.
We heard from Phyllis in Madison, called, couldn't stay with us, and wonders if bed sheets, Miriam, could also contain these hazardous chemicals.
Bed sheets contain dyes, certainly. They're often cotton. Some of the bed sheets are both cotton and polyester. But hopefully bed sheets are not fast fashion, so that, mm-hmm. although some bed sheets do start pilling, which is an indication that the fabric itself is starting to deteriorate and produce fibers. So bed sheets could contain some chemicals. You know, one thing I see that the time is going, and one thing I would like to mention is that the greatest type of microplastic and human-made materials found in waterways,
mm-hmm.
textile fibers. Textile fibers are the greatest. It's not the microplastics from PET bottles and garbage bags. It's actually textile fibers. We found, for example, blue jean fibers in the Arctic.
Mm.
Just because there are so many blue jeans, about 500,000 pairs of blue jeans are sold in the U.S. every year. When you wash them, that denim breaks down, goes into the water, contains indigo dyes, contains other additives, gets taken up by fish.
If someone has purchased clothes from fast fashion retailers, what should they do?
Well, the first thing is not to buy fast fashion, because it's just an environmental disaster that really merits a lot more consideration. And then what you should do, well, even washing them will cause deterioration. As I said, they're not durable. Yes, you should wash your clothes before wearing, but remember that that doesn't protect your water. And fast fashion, just purchasing fast fashion, doesn't protect the people who are making the fashion and also where it goes. So the first thing is just to stop buying fast fashion.
Yeah.
Well, the thing to do with the disposal at end of life is very tricky. Many of us think we're doing well by donating our used clothing for clothing drives, but you need to find out where that clothing is going. Every year, there are about 4 million tons of used textiles that are shipped across the planet, estimated to be worth about $4.6 billion. A lot of the used textiles end up in low-income countries where they're about 40% are such poor quality that they're useless. They end up creating an enormous burden on particular low-income countries such as Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, and Burkina Faso, where the used clothing that we think we're doing well by donating our used clothing is shipped overseas, where
world.
It creates
yeah.
a problem elsewhere.
Miriam, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Miriam Diamond, professor in the Earth Sciences Department at the University of Toronto. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.